Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, those in between, and affiliated to Bending the Elements and Avatar podcast by us, the Novice Elitist, Caleb and Isaac. Caleb, at the moment, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm excited, but I'm a little bit surprised because, you know, we've been talking for years about doing a Hayao Miyazaki series, but I thought that you didn't want to do it until our 1000th episode. And also, why are we starting with Spirited Away? Shouldn't we be starting with the Castle of Cagliostro? Shouldn't we be starting with that?
You're definitely correct in that sense, even if that is inside baseball and the plan going forward. But, you know, that's, first off, it's the 1100s, not the 1000s. Jeez, I'm going to do something beforehand with that. There's plenty of other series to get to, but it's like, no. Get to the maestro at some point with his films and problematic nature. But no, I think what you're referring to is, of course, the cheeky Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender being like Spirited Away, because everybody's like, oh yeah, because a lot of Studio Ghibli films are on the platform of Netflix, I think, still. And so it's like, oh, we're typing Spirited Away, and then they get this episode instead, episode 5 of, as I just said, Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah, here we are returning yet again for our, Spirited Away. This is the big Spirit World episode. So, yeah, I was definitely curious just from the title. I was like, okay, I think I know what we're getting in for. And some of it left me surprised, but some of it didn't. So I guess we'll get into some of that as we go along.
Well, I would have never figured that out from the title itself.
Oh, really? Or is that a joke?
I'll just let the, whether it was sarcasm or not, be left in the air.
Sure. But I guess I'll say, just for the usual bit of writing and directing stuff, this was written by someone named Gabriel Lyonis, I think. Sorry, I'm terrible with names. I apologize. Has a not very long, but established history writing for television. Worked on some of the DC television stuff and that recent National Treasure series for Disney Plus. So he's been working. And it was directed by someone named Roseanne Lang. And she's been working a lot. She's more as a writer, it seems. But yeah, she's got a career at this point. So two established names, at least.
Well, thank you for that, sir. Let's move on to the episode proper with the summer. Oh, wait, we don't do those anymore.
Yeah, not on this one. Save it for Korra. I guess we can move on to just jumping into the episode proper. And before we start talking about it more in depth, I'll ask, what's your best thing, worst thing with this one? And what are you thinking so far? How are you feeling it?
I guess I'll say June.
Yeah.
I think she's probably the best, like, depiction of, if I had to say there's a character that's straight out of, like straight off of the animation cells, it's the actor has done an excellent job with embodying her, and they did a really good job with her. I didn't say anything about Nyla, and that's nothing on Nyla, but I'm just saying I'm only talking about June. Worst thing? That's a good question. This is petty. The effects, just with, you know, okay, maybe not just the effects, but the choice, even though it's limitations, of course, so I can't fault it for that. They're actually shooting in nature, but the effects they do with the spirit world. Your comment referring to, let's just say, they're using a lot of the BC outdoors, which is nice, but I'm definitely I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm getting sick of seeing the BC outdoors and like, all right, let's see something other than, you know, what I might see on a regular basis.
Yeah, I even feel like some of this was shot in parks that I've frequented and I'm like, hey, I know where that is.
Is that Tinehead back there?
Yeah, or I swear some of it was Campbell Valley.
I wouldn't be surprised. If they found, if they went in that horse, like, you know, abandoned horse track, that'd be hilarious. To you, I say, my friend, your best thing and worst thing about Avatar Last Airbender, Spirited Away, because I don't want to. We're not doing Spirited Away just yet.
Oh, did you say if you were feeling it or not with this episode in particular?
Right. I'll do a light not feeling it.
Yeah, I'll start with my worst thing, and I'll echo some of the effects in this one in particular. In particular, a scene with, it's right around the beginning. It's on the back of Appa, which they've, I guess, tried to avoid doing too much shots on Appa's back. And they have one with Aang and Katara just kind of talking about, oh, Katara, you're getting so great at waterbending. And I'm just looking at the backgrounds and I'm like, this, they are just not there. Don't even do this shot if this is how just fake it looks. And I know that's maybe petty. I know we shouldn't be knocking this show so much for the effects.
Because again, if the shoe was on the other foot, I'd be the laughing stock of the crowd and a hypocrite.
Yeah, and I'm sure their budget is not very big for effects, but that's, maybe they could just, you know, maybe not do those shots on Appa's back. Like, I get that was in the show, but if you can't do it, then just don't do it. I mean, and again, that I mentioned in the last episode, this was off the mics, that I was watching this and my partner was sitting next to me reading, and she looked up at that moment when they're on the back of that. She's like, oh, that looks terrible. And then she was listening to them do their lines, and then she was like, oh, it sounds like they're just reading off a script. She's like, what's going on? And I was like, yeah, now that you say it, I can't not feel that a little bit there. So everything about that scene played awkward. So that scene itself was the worst thing for me in this episode, was that moment. My best thing, I echo you. I think June, her first scene with the two of them, especially her line to, you know, she's going to excuse Zuko's rudeness because of how cute she thinks Iroh is. I just thought that whole dynamic was just cute and fun, and I enjoyed it both times we saw it. And yeah, if I was going to say if I'm feeling it or not, if I'm still in the neutral category, I think the last episode had me leaning more towards like, hey, I'm almost getting a positive. This one did pull me back, and it neutral leaning negative. So light not feeling it as well for this episode. All the graphs that people have to pull out to make sense of all this.
Listen, that's why we have to make it binary.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. We're just going to keep it binary, just yes or no. And even then we have some nuances of like, but with, this, I'll also like, make it out and be transparent of saying I've seen episode eight or not eight, sorry, six. Sorry. This is episode five.
Yeah. Transparency. Yeah. Me too.
Point. Excuse me. So anyway, we will not be talking about that because that's for the next episode. So where would you like to begin?
So yeah, we had that scene on the back of Appa, kind of an awkward scene, but they followed up with a scene that I like quite a bit, where they end up landing in this forest that's been severely burned up by firebenders. And while they're just kind of walking around being sad, we see a cute little moment with Momo, where I actually did think it was cute, and I was like, oh, I kind of like that. Where Momo's just sniffing around in the dirt, like, what's this? What do I smell in here? Is there something to eat? He digs up this acorn. And he's looking at it, and he turns around, notices Katara's looking, and he kind of shyly walks over and gives it to her. And for whatever reason, I was just like, hey, that's a cute little moment. Even though Momo has been very much diminished so far in this series, they're barely doing anything with him. I was like, that's a cute little touch to throw in there. So I like that.
True story, getting this from absolutely nowhere, no sources at all. So I'm going to refuse anybody who asked for any citations needed. All they had to do was just for this scene, they just had to go up north and film a bunch of like trees that were already burnt from last year's fires.
Snap. Yeah. They could film it every year, and every year they'd find more burnt down fires.
Are you kidding me? They probably like, they could have just taken like gone to every like, you know, corner of BC and they could have easily like filmed any of that there.
Yeah,
that kind of goes to what it was, and I appreciate the fact, again, we're gonna try not to go, you know, chronologically here because I know this guy doesn't want to do that, but I will appreciate the fact that when we initially did the Spirit World episode way back, you know, book one, episode seven, that one I was postulating as to, and I guess you were as well, of why the Fire Nation was doing this to this, and why they burnt this forest down. And in this, they give a reason, which I appreciate. I believe it was because it was in their way.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
They're just heading to the mountains and they're like, let's clear a path as we're walking. Yeah. But I do like, I think when Sokka has a cute scene with the little girl from the village, I think that had a really natural feel to it and felt like Sokka as well. And then the performance of her dad is, he's explaining about the missing villagers and the more spiritual threat. I think he also sold it well that we're going to get something a little bit different for this episode. So all that setup stuff, I thought that they were doing well, except for that scene on Appa.
So we have for this one, they melded Spirit World, Batau of the Water Tribe, literally with a few elements. What the heck was that one called? Southern Raiders.
Oh.
Though they didn't go fully into that.
Yeah.
And the Storm.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a lot to throw in there.
The Southern Raiders bit obviously was the flashback with Kaya and Katara when, what was his name? I forgot. I was going to look his name up, but the guy who basically part of the Southern Raiders who burnt Kaya alive, which we actually see done this time. There's no take me prisoner. It's like, there are no prisoners. It's just like burns her alive.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a scene that was done well. I liked the little kid, the fear for her. I thought that worked. And the mom's self-sacrifice. And I thought they did just enough of showing the two of them together before the death of Katara remembering the stuff with her mom to make it have more of an impact when we do see the death. So I like that.
I forgot. Pardon me. I did forget about the whole bits of where it's a Lotus Eater plot of they're all trapped in the spirit world.
Yeah, and I like the bit with Sokka too. Both them kind of seeing their parents. We get to meet the actors playing Hakoda and Batau. And I like that scene, and then I felt real bad for Sokka afterwards, because he, even during the bit where they're like, oh, you did such a good job driving, and he's like, wait a minute, I remember this day, didn't I screw up? And they're like, oh, don't worry about it, it's all about teamwork. And then he overhears his dad being like, oh, I would have expected so much more from that Sokka, immediately he screws up, he almost got you guys killed. And then you just see Sokka just break down crying. I was like, oh man, I felt something for him there.
Yeah, this definitely pushes Zuko and Sokka to be a lot more related, I guess, in terms of fatherly characters being disappointments to him. Well, we'll actually see about that, because Ozai's, he's changing his tune a bit, or at least the way they're making him out is a little bit different, given that first scene. Again, sorry if I'm dripping all over, but I think that's the proper way to do it.
Yeah.
My head of when he's just, in the Fire Lord chamber, and he's looking at strategies, and then Azula, like a snake in his ear, whispers that more assets should be given to Zhao and he should be admiral, which he does, and I guess Blue Spirit as well, just because that brings in the becomes admiral for that reason. But then he sure he agrees with her, but then he berates her about the fact oh yes, Zhao discovered the Avatar, and then surprisingly, Ozai is like, enough of your lies.
Yeah.
And I almost went, wow. Dang, he is whipping her around, but he's definitely showing her who's in charge.
Yeah, and he's even don't forget, it was actually Zuko who discovered him, who's showing dedication against adversity. And he's not doing self-serving flattery or coy whispers. And he gives her this really stern look. Full-out slap. But she turns around and you could tell that she's just oh crap, I screwed up so bad. And then when we see her doing her training out there, I was like, she's probably thinking oh no, I don't want to end up like Zuko. Yeah, definitely an intense dynamic for being that, having that as your dad.
Again, it's making me, I guess, sympathize with Ozai. And, but is it because I already have prior knowledge as to, what the other version was like, or
Ozai, did you say, or?
Yeah, I said Ozai. No, I meant Ozai.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Am I getting sympathies for the devil? I don't exactly know. Or is it also because I just know what episode 6 is like?
Yeah, it's hard not to bring that in, because that one has a lot going on there.
Oh, I guess the other bit was they stole from Korra, where, Aang doesn't revert to a child, though I believe Katara does, when it's during the scene with, the Southern Raiders bit. Aang instead of Cora, young Cora visiting Iroh at his tea party, Mad Hatter tea party, excuse me, obviously. In this, it's Aang visiting Gyatso.
Yeah.
And this time it's like Gyatso either chose not to move on or, well, I thought that was a whole illusion. I thought that was like him being tricked.
Yeah, I thought that too, but I guess not, which I thought was an interesting choice. And I thought that was a really nice scene. I thought that I just liked the actor playing Amon Gyatso, and I thought that there was you could feel throughout that scene too that he was kind of like, oh, you know, this will probably be my last time to interact with Aang.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that you could feel I've seen episode 6, I'm not going to say what happens, but you could feel that shading of him trying to give his final words to Aang, and I just thought that the way the actor played it had a really nice weight to it, so I like that. And I hope we do get to see more of him later on.
I also forgot this is, there's a reference to, I say reference, but there's, you know, a big reference to the library. If that same spirit is who I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty, I can't remember the title that he gave himself when he first introduced himself, but it was something like the Master of Knowledge or something like that. So I was like, oh, okay.
If it's Ye Who Knows 10,000 Things.
Yeah, I'm almost positive it was him. Oh, I did see, I did look it up, and I can't remember I'm pretty sure it does say the name in the IMDb credits, but who knows if that's actually accurate for what they're going for. But it was played by someone that we've seen before, a veteran of Avatar live action stuff. It's Randall Kim, who played the Keymaker in The Matrix and played the false air nomad in that movie. So
wow. I was actually wondering if it was, because I listened to the voice. I was like, that voice sounds familiar. How come I know that?
That's why I looked it up. I was like, I know that voice. Where's that from? So, but I like that scene well enough. I thought that the effects held up a little bit better for that. I feel like this show actually does okay when it comes to effects that aren't matting people into environments. So I thought that was okay.
Just because I was on it, good freaking grief. Azula is ruthless when she's going at her trainer. And there was that hint at the very end before Mai stopped her of blue in her fire.
Yeah, I like that.
But I definitely am going to question if this is Proto Azula, then by the end of the whatever this is part, she needs to be more in control of her emotions. I'm not talking about the next episode or anything like that, to do lightning, just because I don't think it's there for her.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if they were doing like this first season, we're seeing what would become the unstoppable threat that Azula becomes.
That's what I think.
Yeah, which is kind of a cool idea, too. That's not bad.
To see that she was already unhinged beforehand and really has to put up appearances to keep that appearance up.
Yeah. And maybe, because we talked about, I think, a little bit when we were covering the series, more so in the comics, that it is like Azula has this has to be perfect element. And it was kind of like, is an element of this because she saw what happened to someone who wasn't perfect, her brother Zuko?
Stop bringing up the next episode.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, yeah, well, maybe we'll have to save some of that for next episode, yeah.
But in the series, potentially, or again, her father groomed her into that position.
Yeah, maybe we'll table the Ozai and Azula stuff till next episode, because, yeah, it's almost pointless to talk about it here. It's going to have such a bigger role next time.
Moist, definitely.
So let's, yeah, maybe get back to some of the stuff going on once we actually get to the spirit world. I did think it was funny that it almost looks exactly like the Force Ghosts in Star Wars. It looks so much like it. So that's kind of fun.
Which, what entity is looking like Force Ghosts?
Just them when they go into the spirit world. They're blue.
Oh, right. Before they cross over in Heibai's Shrine. For that, by the way, with Heibai's Shrine, I guess this is also like an obvious adaptation of the spirit world, not spirit world, but like Winter Solstice, excuse me. But that's for, I know that's more for episode 6, but like that's obvious. Blue spirit. I forgot to mention that. That's also the blue spirit, because the bodies of Katara and Sokka, one, the changes, they are brought into the spirit world for the whole, you know, Lotus Eating Machine plot. But two, their bodies are left behind. And so when Aang comes out, he needs to obviously go and find somebody to save them. And so that's basically what the premise of the blue spirit was.
Oh, okay. I thought you mentioned Luis Frio, and I couldn't remember exactly how that tied in.
I know, but this is where, because they were sick from the storm, and then Aang has to go get those frogs from the herbalist, and then from there gets attacked by the Union archers.
But yeah, well, once we get more into the spirit world stuff, I couldn't help feeling like, oh, is this a budget saving thing that we're not seeing any sort of strange spirit chimeric beasties? I mean, we see the three, I guess. We see Ko, we see the Great Owl, and we see Haybai. But we do see Sokka eventually, like, what's that there? What's that there? But we don't see anything. And it does just look like they're walking around just, yeah, any BC national park, regional park, so provincial park.
Actually, what they accomplished here was somebody had gotten early access to Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2, and they saw that whole scene in the gladiator match. Don't worry, I'm not giving anything much away. And they're like, ooh, we're going to do something similar, but we don't have the budget to do it that way. But we're going to basically just do that, where it's all, you know, like, I guess, colored light, I suppose.
I think in Dune, it was like all the color was gone. But
oh, well, that too.
Well, I never would have thought that comparison, but now that you mention it, I don't see it at all.
I'm just good. That makes perfect sense. I was leading you astray. So I think it's three-tailed wolf, because nine-tailed wolf, that's obvious. Okay, wait, she's Fox. On screen right now. Fox, thank you. What did I say? Wolf. Yeah, pardon me. Yep, three tails. Okay, so obviously the nine-tailed wolf, fox. Nine-tailed fox, excuse me, is a thing in Japanese yokai mythology, I believe. But Naruto, I know. Not the whole thing. But if she's from... I don't recognize her from Korra, and I... Unless it's one of the, you know, Wang Shitong... Serious proper. Wang Shitong's servants, or, you know, at least, you know...
That's what I thought.
Was it Knowledge Seekers? Knowledge Seekers, that's what it is. But if she, but she had a little medallion on her. If she's somebody from the comics, well, that's ones that I haven't, like, read yet, so... I don't know.
Yeah. I was very curious, because at first that's what I thought it was, but the more she talked and the more I looked at her, I was like, yeah, it does seem like they're highlighting that medallion thing. And her dialogue did seem like they were setting her up to be something a little bit bigger. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do there. That does feel, you know, whenever they give us something new in this series, that feels like it's a little bit more fresh. I'm more interested because yeah, I mean, we've already seen so much of what this is that, yeah, anything new that they can give us, I'm interested to see.
This is the thing with me as well. Now, they so quickly, I don't want to spend all night with the whole thing. Oh, and I guess, for Pitt's sake, sorry, as well. One other influence, the swamp.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, I can't help but think of the swamp, where it's just like, and this makes me believe that this is more like, you know, what the swamp should have been, I guess, where it was like connected to the spirit world. But just with the three-tailed fox. With her, we don't focus on the medallion other than like it being the shot. We don't like, you know, zoom into her tail that has the medallion. But with the medallion itself, I'm just going to wild claim, and, you know, speculation is toxic and leads to negativity in the long run. I think that's Yue.
Oh.
I don't know why, but I'm throwing it out there. That's Yue.
That's interesting.
Just because... Because silver-haired or silver-tailed fox, and I guess like silver-haired fox.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And she's got like, I'm assuming that they're going to make her hair silver in this. So I'm just like, Hail Mary, like trying to swing for a grand slam. Like, that's Yue.
Yeah, that's a fox spirit.
And she already has, and if they're going the way of her already being like a spiritualist, that's awesome.
That'd be a cool development. And I hope that they get, well, I guess not too much. Yeah, like you said, speculation. Let's not go
there. It's not going to do it. It's that grain of salt. It's not going to be like that, knocking on wood. But like, I'm just, it ain't Toph. I know it for a fact, because Toph would be a flying boar, which I almost thought they were going to do in this. But then they did Gyatso. So I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and speaking of stuff that maybe we were expecting or thinking they might do in this episode, I was positive we're going to see Ko, and I will say I wasn't necessarily disappointed. I thought they did some cool, creepy stuff. I liked during the traumatic moment of Katara kind of reliving her mother's death, and that Ko's face just suddenly appears on the face of the guard. I thought that was kind of a creepy moment. Oh, by the way, I did want to mention that I thought it was a fun touch that the mom in this was the same actress who played the mom in Beans, the guitar actress's other big feature.
Nice.
So I was like, hey, pairing them up again. There we go. That's kind of nice.
Why not? They already had like a relationship, so this probably would have helped.
Yeah,
I think she did a good job.
Yeah, I liked her in this too. I hope we see her again as well.
I just want her and her like on-screen husband to interact.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, and I was looking at the actor who plays the killer, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to bring him back for the third season. I'm curious to see what they do
with there. Yeah, and if they age him up at all for the Southern Raiders, if we go that direction.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Well, we have no idea, but where was I going to go for this? So they make a big adaptation change that, again, I won't go into the core spoiler, but I will at least say that Ko doesn't really steal the face. Well, maybe he does. Like, wait, is that for the next episode? I forget now. But basically, yeah, it's not the same, which is fine. I get that. But I definitely, when he interacts with Aang, I'm like, Aang's acting very much as if he has prior knowledge to this all happening, as if he's supposed to remain very neutral faced and as a matter of fact and not show any emotion or else.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Because remember, if he gets, you know, it shows any form of emotion, guess what happens? Ko takes his face off.
Yeah, they it does seem like they're playing it different here.
Adaptation, I get it.
Yeah. But yeah, what do you think about just the design choice and the voice that we get, George Takei? Another veteran, I guess, this time from the animated series.
Oh, that was George Takei, eh? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, coming in.
Wow, I now need to listen to that a little bit more. Well, one, hopefully he shows up again because, well, is the reason he's mad at Aang said in this episode or is it in the next episode?
It's hinted at. He says, have you come to return what you stole? And then he...
Okay, I'm not saying anything yet.
Yeah.
I won't say anything in the next episode. But, even though, you know, we've already watched it, but they kind of blend together. That's the problem.
Yeah.
With that bit with Ko being Koi, I guess.
There you go.
The bit with the masks, you know, being shown was obvious and I guess makes sense, but I wasn't finding, because in the... it's not because of the CGI, but because of the way it looked and the, at least how they portrayed it. I will say I will prefer the original version over just for how creepy he was. And
yeah, very creepy.
Just they built him up and then all of a sudden, and here's Ko. I'm like, all right, we're doing him immediately. Like, fair enough. Nothing wrong with that. But I will say I love the build up to Ko in the original series more than I did here. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there. I think that they did a decent job with the look. But yeah, the impact is definitely different.
Oh, it's a direct translation. I'm not denying that. Like, it pretty much looks the same from one form of animation to the other. This might be jarring. Could you imagine if they cel-shaded all the chimeric beasts and spirits?
It probably would have been jarring, yeah.
You know, though, with the spirits, I think that would have made sense.
Could have.
Because they are at least out of this world. This world that we're seeing, excuse me. So it actually would have, they could have like done some more leeway. And I guess I'll say it. I think I kind of dug what they were doing with Heibei, with like, you know, how he was animated. I think I liked that version more. I say more, but I think that was the best version I've seen of the spirits in this so far. Well, this is the first episode with spirits in it. So I think out of all of them, I guess the fox I liked as well. What am I saying?
Yeah, no, I think that stuff, I think all the animals in this looked okay, I think, newly introduced ones. Well, actually, even Momo looked okay, but the Shirshu looked decent. I think that they did a decent job with that in this episode.
Actually, yeah, no, Nyla does pretty much look like a direct translation off the screen. I wonder what they had June's actor sit on while they were as reference.
Yeah, and you already mentioned she was a great translation, just visually speaking. And performance. I'm curious to see what they do with her more. I think she was really good there.
I don't want to get this suggestive at all, but the bit in The Old Masters, in book three, episode, I can't believe I'm still doing this, episode 19. I gotta say, when who says it, like, she's got like flawless skin or whatever it is, it's like,
oh yeah,
yeah, like
Ty Lee.
No, not Ty, not, it wasn't Ty Lee, it was either Suki or it was Toph.
Oh yeah, I think it was Suki. Yeah. And I remember we had a discussion, like, who was it? Like, it felt weird that we thought it was Toph or someone. I can't remember who.
Well, I said it probably was Toph because she's got seismic sensor. She could, like, I guess, see what June's... See. Okay, this is weird anyway. But yeah, I don't know why. Like, the actor looks pretty... Like, they made her live up to the, like, oh yeah, she looks very flawless.
Yeah, I did like how rude Zuko was to her immediately. Like, oh, looking down at her as this bounty hunter. Of course, I let this trash run around here.
Oh, man. Like, oh, brother, Zuko's a grouch in this.
Yeah, immediately puts his foot in his mouth, almost gets into a fight with her.
Egg on his face.
Oh, and I did actually appreciate his awkwardness, where he's used to being honorable. He's not used to just skirting around doing things kind of under the table. And so when he has to try to bribe the tavern owner, he like very nervously puts the cash on the table and then says, hey, like, are you going to tell me now?
Yep.
I thought that was kind of cute. I like that.
Yeah, and then turns out everybody knows about the Avatar, so it's like, oh, the secret's out.
Yeah, and I liked at the beginning that they set in some room that other stories are happening off screen. They mentioned that, I guess, again, Sokka and his harem, he was trying to hook up with some chick in the village that they were at, and it turned out she was a Fire Nation spy. Oh, that's
right, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And then, yeah, apparently they mentioned that, oh, we've heard about the Avatar from this canyon guide. He said the Avatar fought some canyon crawlers, and, oh, he was fighting pirates, too. So we know that those episodes are happening in the middle.
Okay. I did not realize they went there. I guess I missed that little bit. But, oh, that's kind of a shame. I'll say that. Like, no, don't worry. I just mean I kind of wanted them to do the... Give another maybe they'll do it in the, they probably won't, but maybe they'll do it in, like,
probably not,
whenever the Earth arc happens. I guess we should call these arcs by this point. Yeah. Hey Aang, when do you learn waterbending anyway? But with maybe this is like book one air, but in or book one Avatar, I don't know. Yeah, so yeah, I kind of was hoping that the great divide would have like actually shown the ramifications of Ozai's decisions and showing refugees or immigrants and them having to like desperately escape out of like having to cross the Grand Canyon or Great Divide. But with, I guess, that first scene where they're running away from the Firebenders or the Fire Nation soldiers, I think this is the first instance we get of masks.
Yeah, no, it's the first time. Yeah, I did have that in my notes to ask you what you think of that.
I like the masks. I won't say, obviously, they're direct translation, but I didn't mind the masks.
Yeah, I think they look okay. Yeah. I mean, I think by the end we started to be like, okay, when are they going to change up these masks in the series? So maybe we'll feel the same as we go along. But...
Well, no. What it was in the comics, specifically, I guess, The Promise... We were like, wait a minute, why is Zuko still clinging to like those scary masks? I thought we were supposed to be about like, you know, cohabitation and coexistence. And you still have these I guess in a way, yes, you're supposed to have face masks, but maybe change them up so they don't look so like, you know, like skulls.
Yeah, that's fair. This is supposed to be a happier, more peaceful Fire Nation. Shouldn't have that worshiping skulls kind of look.
I get that it's supposed to intimidate. That's definitely fair. But I don't know. Again, I'm just like, it doesn't fall in line with what Zuko was spouting out at the end of the series proper.
And speaking more of Zuko, too, I like that they're filling in or continuing to build the tension between him and his crew. And yeah, he's just a big jerk. I mean, and we keep focusing on this one guy, the mutton chops guy, G. And yeah, you keep seeing the hurt on his face every time Zuko just knocks him around.
Yep.
So we'll see if they continue to develop that. Spoilers, we already know.
Well, but even then, it's like this, the seeds of discontent with like Zhao. He brought him into the office to like, you know, talk to him about stuff. I mean, it's already like Zuko's kind of sealed his fate. This is not on any like speculation. Well, it's speculation, but it's. kind of, even if we know what happens in the next episode, it's like, yeah, but still, it's right there of like, of course that's going to happen. What is going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah, you could tell that they've been developing it pretty steadily throughout this season so far.
So if anybody cries foul of like, where the flip did this come from? It's like, watch the episodes and you'll find out.
Yeah, and they've been pretty careful with Zuko's plots overall. I think that they've been doing a very decent job structuring how the story is developing for him. And I'll say I like, too, that because, again, we saw that Zuko was so repelled by them having mercenaries running around, paid guns, bounty hunters. He's like, this is, you know, he's been so strict about we need to keep order and keep our respect as the Fire Nation. I like the way that Iroh talked him into using her at the end of this with the pie show bit. And Zuko's kind of bored, like, can't you just tell me the story once we get back on the ship? Like, you have to say it right now. I thought that was kind of fun, too. But honestly, that's the end of my notes. The only last thing I had to say was I was glad to see a mention of Avatar Kurik's wife. But that's it. That's all I had.
Mention. They was that. Wait, was that in this one or was that the very end?
Oh, I don't think we actually get the name, but we see the face. I'm pretty sure. Maybe they do mention it. Oh, you know what? Actually, I'm getting it confused. I just filled in knowing who that was, but
yeah.
I think the Avatar mentioned it's actually them talking about Avatar Roku. Was saying, oh, there's one person who almost defeated. I think it's Monkey Atso who says that.
Yes.
Avatar Roku is the only one who almost defeated Ko.
And by the way, I'm forgetting. I got it wrong. It's Fog of Lost Souls, not like Isle of Lost Souls.
Hmm.
Oh, wait, no, this is in the episode where they basically will be food for Ko in place of him stealing their face, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I think that, yeah, I believe they did say that. But yeah, no, I feel bad. This one, admittedly, has an element of feeling more like it's a bridge to the next plot. It feels like part one of a two-part story.
Clearly. Just like, I guess, the last previous two episodes.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and so I feel like this one has a lot of setting up the pieces, and the next episode is really when we get into the meat of it.
No, I guess part one was, well, I say part one, but I guess the pilot was technically like, you know, its own thing, and then part two was just like a follow-up to any of the stuff that was happening with part one. Yeah. Then episodes 3 and 4 were definitely clearly connected.
Yeah, and these two definitely share that similar thing.
Wait.
So that's an interesting choice, too.
Oh, wait, right, okay, well, the second episode was Suki, that's right. Sorry, I'm not trying to forget the show, it's just like, all right, they condensed everything into 8 episodes, so it's like, if they're doing the Water Tribe in 2 episodes of 7 and 8, and Aang's supposed to, like, master,
we'll see.
Don't worry, everybody, but if they do, hear me out, I gotta make a promise to this, if Aang just instantly grasps waterbending and becomes a master, don't worry, I'm gonna cry foul. I will not just be considered a hairless ape in terms of, like, you know, calling Katara, like, you know, hacks. It's like, no, Aang will get my, you know, face my wrath of that. Okay, wrath, whatever.
Yeah.
But he will, you know, face criticism and judgment for me regarding that as well. Just like, and that's not right. You can't just power that character up, regardless of gender.
Yeah, and I guess my final point, just because I just saw it on screen, is it is, I guess, important to mention that even though Ozai did knock around Azula and kind of, you know, insulted her for trying to be sneaky about pushing for her views, he does still at the end send the resources to Zhao, sends him the Union archers, and positions him to be the next one to lead this hunt. So that's something worth mentioning as well. But that's all I got.
Oh, that's fair. And then, of course, this is also the end. Instead of Aang having to go to the Fire Temple Island, and instead of it being because, you know, he's being called to by Roku himself, this time it's for different reasons, of course, to save his friends. I guess that's more personal, of course, but we'll see what happens in the next episode. And they don't exactly resolve the Heibei situation, do they? Other than just, like, turn him into the giant panda that he is.
In this episode or the next one?
In this episode.
No, I don't think so. No. I guess we'll see if they wrap that up next time. So, I don't know. I don't think so. Not that I remember, though.
So talking about it definitely has made me remember, like, oh, that's right. There was all this good stuff about it. But I'm still going to stick to, like, yeah, like, not feeling it.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like it's setting up the groundwork for stuff that could be better. But on its own, yeah, it feels like there's just a lot going on throughout the whole episode. And I'm never really super with all the stuff that's going on. So, yeah, just like I said, overall, still in the neutral category for this show. Still leaning positive, but overall, not super engaged 5 episodes in. So, sorry to say. Even though we've both highlighted a lot of stuff that they're doing well, it's just, if I'm ever wanting to reach for Avatar Last Airbender, I'm not reaching for this. I'm reaching for that original program. So that's just the way it is right now. So,
but I will at least not, I'll stress that there are good parts to this episode, and I will
absolutely
not forget it.
But maybe we'll see what we think of the next episode as we come back next week or 2 weeks from now. I'm not sure currently. But until then, thank you, Isaac, for once again joining me for some more Avatar. Always happy to discuss it with you.
Of course, I got to give this thing its fair dues, and we gotta at least be the arbiters of this to see if it is worth watching or if it was worth it's probably worth remaking. But anyway,
well, maybe that's a discussion to have when we get to the end of this season.
A part overview, you would say.
I don't know about that. I don't know if we need an overview for this, but hey, find it at the end. But until then, take us home, Isaac. Take us home.
Only you, those listeners right now, one ear and the other, can start forest fires.
Oh, no.
Until next time. Peace.
'Bene of the Elements does not endorse starting forest fires. If you see anyone starting forest fires, report them to the police.